Hello. Here's your KVNF regional newscast for Friday, January 6th. Governor John Hickenlooper is entering his second-to-last legislative session as governor. He talked to Benta Berkland.
This is one of your last sessions as governor. You have two more legislative sessions. Does that make you, going into this session, think a little bit more about your legacy since there isn't as much time left?
Well, I'm certainly very conscious of how little time is left just because we have, you know, on my little handheld phone here, if you were to look at it at the top of every single day, it says how many days are left in this term. So I don't worry about the legacy as much as I want to just get finished, or at least as close to finish as you can get on some of these things. You know, the things that really matter.
Such as?
Some of the workforce things we're working on right now. There's an apprenticeship program. We're going to scale up to not, you know, it's not just an apprenticeship for pipe fitters or trade, but it really is for all kinds of industries, right? Banking, insurance, advanced manufacturing, aerospace, cybersecurity. We're going to give kids the opportunity, if they want to, you know, when they enter their junior year in high school, they can go to work for 3 days and then go back and go to school for 2 days and study things that are relevant to the job they have. And they'll still be able to get their high school degree and hopefully get some credits towards college. Obviously trying to get a control, really limit the growth of healthcare costs. High priority, what we call Colorado the Beautiful, but doing an inventory of all our most beautiful landscapes and places, having an assessment of all our trails, bike trails, hiking trails, and see where the missing links are. Do we have to acquire some more open space? Do we need to make sure we finish some trails in certain places?
This is an off-year election, so a lot of lawmakers talk about this being the session where something substantive may happen around some significant policy challenges, Tabor reform, transportation, the water plan. Do you think we'll see some movement? I know we do have a divided legislature.
I think both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are ready to roll up their sleeves and try and figure out what is the right compromise. I mean, look at the congestion on our interstates and our state highways. This is the time we need to get more funding for our transportation infrastructure. Part of that was going to be accomplished through the hospital provider fee. But we couldn't get it through last year. We might not get it through this year. So we're looking at alternative ways we can fund some of that transportation infrastructure. The advantage of the hospital provider fee was it would give us health support also for making sure that broadband gets all over the state, making sure that we get more funding back into higher ed and K-12 education.
How supportive are you of trying to push a referred measure to voters?
You know, I don't really care how we get the resources, whether it's an increase in the gas tax, an increase in the sales tax, an increase in the income tax. I don't see any plausible way, anything that we can cut. I mean, we're not going to take health care benefits from people. We're not going to take away people's, some of their basic support, people with developmental disabilities or serious mental health issues. We're going to have to find some sort of new resources. And I'm happy to sit down with the Republican leadership and say, you show me where you want the resources to come from, and I will support you. And I think we're past the point where we can, you know, just kick the can down the road.
You've said before you don't usually like to come in and proclaim what's going to happen, or, you know, you want the legislature to kind of, those lawmakers, do their thing. Are you going to take more of a hands-off approach like you have before, or do you feel that sense of urgency with time running out?
My goal is to engage the legislature early, both Republicans and Democrats, and just try to listen.
We're coming out of a divisive presidential race. Does that change how you look at this session?
Maybe a little bit. We want to put a priority on trying to bring both sides of every issue together. Almost every issue, if it's still an issue, that means you've got someone who's for it and someone who's against it. We want to try and see if we can build bridges. No one party, no one person has all the right answers.
Thanks, Governor.
Always a pleasure, Benta.
That was Governor John Hickenlooper. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
The number of civilians who die when interacting with police appears to be a lot higher than previously thought.
Police officers have the legal authority to take lives, but keeping tabs on how many people are killed each year hasn't been easy. Brandon Patterson with the news organization Mother Jones broke down new Department of Justice data which show police-related fatalities in the U.S. are significantly higher than earlier estimates.
And this new DOJ number is the fullest, I won't say complete because it's an estimate, but the fullest and likely the most accurate estimate that we have at this point of how many of these deaths occur every year.
After searching through media reports and other sources, the DOJ estimates 1,900 people died during a police encounter in the 12 months ending in May of 2016. In 2014, police departments reported only 444 police shootings to the FBI. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And finally, for a new take on a familiar story, here's Inside Energy.
Okay. Let's take coal production data from the Energy Information Administration and play a single musical note for each week. The higher the pitch of that note, the higher the coal production. This sound represents how much coal came out of the ground in coal's single best week ever, 24 million tons in February 2006. This sound is one of coal's worst weeks, 11 million tons in April 2016. A lot of coal? A little coal. If we string the sounds together, again with each note representing one week, it sounds like this. An audio history of U.S. coal at 10 weeks a second. Okay, in the 80s, we were coming off the 1970s energy crisis and the newly updated Clean Air Act. Production? Chugging along. It sounded like this. You can hear how coal's song is all over the place, some up weeks, some down weeks. Then, cheap, low-sulfur Wyoming coal burst onto the scene. During the 90s, production soared. Hear how the overall tone is higher than before? In the 2000s, America built tons of homes, which needed lots of electricity. Natural gas prices were high, making burning coal the most economic way to fuel the housing boom. And in 2008, coal reached a peak, averaging 23 million tons a week. Then everything changed. Natural gas took off, and it was cheap. Old coal-fired power plants were retired and replaced with natural gas and renewables. Coal has been up and down since 2010, but you can hear more downs than ups. And in the past year, it fell off a virtual cliff. Once again, here's coal production at its peak in 2008 and in the past 6 months. For coal, it's back to the 1980s. What took 3 decades to build up has taken a year to undo. For Inside Energy, I'm Jordan Werfsbrock.
And that was your regional newscast for Friday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould.